mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, no matter where you stand on the politically divisive issue of student loan forgiveness, one thing is indisputable. The cost of earning a degree is crippling many students and families. Is there a solution that doesn't involve shifting the burden to taxpayers? Also this morning, today is Hire a Veteran Day. Why many service members say that finding a job is the hardest part about returning to civilian life after the military, and what can be done to make it easier. And happening around town, celebrating 5 years of offering a road to hope, Welcome to a New Life is holding their annual fundraiser next month to help continue paving roads and building bridges. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 25th, 2024. Lots of stuff going on in the news to talk about. Obviously, the presidential election has been very much in the news over the past couple of weeks, first with the Trump assassination attempt and then Joe Biden dropping out of the race of the Democratic ticket. He addressed the nation in a very brief address last night, explaining his decision to the American public, although he really didn't owe us an explanation. I think we all really know why he's dropping out. But he tried to, put a nice, neat little bow on it last night in his address to the nation. The one candidate that we haven't heard very much from amidst all of this news is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is mounting a third-party campaign. And I saw this story on the Newswire. Apparently, RFK Jr. has sent out 100,000 fortune cookies to restaurants across the state of New Hampshire. This is his campaign strategy. He sent out 100,000 fortune cookies to restaurants across New Hampshire featuring ads for his candidacy. Representatives for the RFK Jr. campaign say that he's trying to reach out to voters in a unique way. That is definitely unique. Each of the fortunes have a QR code that links to his campaign website. And the campaign says it is considering sending out cookies to other parts of the country as well. Well, that's a winning strategy right there, I'm sure. It's the fortune cookie campaign. All righty then. And it's amazing to me that he's not getting more support. It's really, it's hard to believe that he's not getting more support. So yesterday, wild day on Wall Street. I don't know if you follow business news, but the NASDAQ, it's a very tech-heavy stock market index, the NASDAQ, had its worst day since 2022. A lot of tech stocks really took a major hit yesterday on the NASDAQ. Tesla shares collapsed after something like somewhere around 12%. It was 11, 12, 13% by the time the dust settled at the end of the day. Tesla shares were down dramatically. This after the company reported second quarter earnings that fell short of expectations. Now, of course, who's the biggest Tesla shareholder? Elon Musk. And because of the dramatic drop in the stock price of Tesla, Elon Musk saw his net worth plummet from $249 billion to $232 billion. Yes, that's right. Elon Musk lost $16 billion in one day. $16 billion he lost in one day. Wow. That is amazing. Now, mind you, he is still the richest person in the world. He's about $30 billion ahead of Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, who is number two on that list. But Jeff Bezos also lost a significant amount of his net worth yesterday because Amazon also is listed on the NASDAQ. So now didn't lose as much. It's a little bit closer now. Bezos and Musk are a little bit closer now than they were before the day yesterday, before the day started. But Elon Musk still comfortably ahead. This, by the way, kids, is why we don't tax net worth, because it can change so dramatically from one day to the next. I mean, it's not like Elon Musk's bank account is $16 billion lighter than it was this time yesterday. That is net worth on paper because of all of his the stock that he owns, and the stock became less valuable. So it's not like he didn't lose anything out of his bank account, but his net worth went down dramatically in less than 24 hours there. But anyway, let's see. And, of course, the airlines have been very much in the news, and I thought this was kind of interesting. You know, all of the problems with Boeing, and then the CrowdStrike computer crash over the weekend that wreaked havoc with all kinds of airlines, most notably Delta, still trying to sort everything out and get back to running as normal. They say maybe today they will be back to normal operations with Delta Airlines. But this, I thought, was kind of interesting in terms of, you know, airlines with bad press. According to a recent lawsuit, a California woman by the name of Oksana Krychenko is suing JetBlue. She is claiming that the cruel treatment she received from the airline, caused her cancer to return. That's her claim. Now, I don't mean to laugh about this. I mean, you know, obviously, cancer is very serious, and wouldn't wish that on anyone, that their cancer would return. So we feel for the this lady. But she claims that an incident last year in which she was not allowed to bring her emotional support French bulldog into first class with her triggered an excessive amount of stress that raised her tumor levels and caused her cancer to return. She was in remission. Then she had all of this stress because JetBlue wouldn't allow her to bring her emotional support French bulldog into first class, and that triggered a recurrence of her cancer. She is seeking reimbursement. She and her husband seeking reimbursement for hospital and medical expenses, attorney's fees, and monetary damages. So, good luck with that. Again, I don't mean to make fun of, you know, this woman's cancer returning. It's very serious. And like I said, we wouldn't wish this on anyone. But do we really believe, are we really buying that the airline JetBlue is the culprit, is to blame for her, the recurrence of her cancer? Idiot, do you really think that that's, yeah. All right. Here's big news. This is something that you definitely want to know. Among the first things you need to know, the most buzzworthy stories of the day. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down? Chick-fil-A is testing French fries. That's right. Of course, the chain famous for its iconic waffle fries, but the test kitchen, the Chick-fil-A test kitchen in Maryland, is experimenting with a new side of traditional French fries. An Instagram post showcases the golden treats with the background of Rebecca Black's Friday song. You remember Friday, Friday? Yeah. So that's playing in the background, and they're showing off their new fries. So whether that means they are coming on Friday, we will see. Don't know if this is going to be offered nationwide or just in test markets or what the future may be. But French fries being tested at Chick-fil-A. Big, big news. That is big. I love Chick-fil-A. I am not a big waffle fry fan. And if you are, that's fine. I'm just not. It's just not my thing. I prefer regular fries over other waffle fries. So this would be a big deal to me. Maybe to you as well. We'll see. And definitely stay on top in this story and follow up as appropriate. Very, very big news. And how about this? Among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, Hard to believe that nobody thought about this until now. I mean, we've been talking for a number of years about going back to the moon and maybe traveling to Mars, colonizing other planets, so on and so forth, etc., etc., etc. You would think that somewhere along the line, someone would have thought of this before now, but a new study has found that at least half of the medications on the International Space Station would expire before astronauts could make it back from Mars. Half of the medications would expire before astronauts could make it back from Mars. This poses problems for future space missions to the Red Planet. We're talking medications including basic things like antibiotics, allergy medicines, sleep aids. In the same way you shouldn't take expired medications that you have lying around at home, space exploration agencies will need to plan on expired medications being less effective in space as well. The senior researcher of this study, Dr. Daniel Buckland, said 54 of the 91 medications currently stocked on the International Space Station have a shelf life of 3 years or less. And so this is another one of those problems that I have to overcome if we are going to one day travel to Mars. You do not want to end up on the Red Planet without your allergy meds. Although presumably, whatever it is that you're allergic to probably is going to be left behind on Earth. I don't know that they have, you know, ragweed on Mars or if you're allergic to cat dander, just don't take your cat to Mars with you and you should be fine. You would think that maybe it would not be that big of a deal for certain ones. But on the other hand, you're in an enclosed space with a number of other people. You're probably going to get a headache at one point or another, so you're going to want some of these medications, I think. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly sunny today, a high around 80, just a few clouds tonight, a low around 60. Multiple fire departments battled a house fire in Liberty Township, a little northwest of Findlay. When the Liberty Township Fire Department arrived at the house on Township Road 95, the house was fully involved and every person was out of the residence. The homeowner was home at the time of the fire and was able to remove a dog from the house. Fire did claim the life of one cat. The house is a total loss, and the cause of the fire is currently unknown at this time. The state fire marshal is investigating the cause of the fire. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help the woman affected by the fire, who owns Canine Retreat and Spa. Get more on the fire in this story on our website. Ohio's governor signed a bill that requires AEDs in every public and chartered non-public school in the state.
Over the years, we've reported several stories of kids who've died from sudden cardiac arrest because an automated external defibrillator wasn't available. But now it is state law. AEDs now required in every public and chartered non-public school in Ohio and all municipally owned and or operated sports and recreation venues. According to the American Heart Association, sudden cardiac arrest is the number one killer of student athletes.
ONN's Monica Robbins reporting. Get more in the story on our website. There's a new rule at the Ohio State Fair that opened this week.
Anyone under the age of 18 won't be allowed into the fair without an adult chaperone after 6 in the evening. The rule does not apply to concerts at the fair or children with livestock.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The Findlay Family YMCA will host its annual Community Youth Triathlon on Saturday, August 10th at Riverside Park. New this year is an all-abilities division, providing an empowering opportunity for youth with developmental differences. The registration deadline is Monday, August 5th. Get more on the Y's Youth Triathlon in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So So now our cover story this morning, student loan forgiveness has become one of the most divisive issues in politics. One of the first things that Joe Biden did early in his presidency was attempt to enact sweeping debt relief for student loan borrowers. You remember that, right? And of course, after that was quickly struck down by the Supreme Court, he has since tried to do the same thing, kind of piecemeal, little by little, to get around the SCOTUS ruling. Just last week, he announced another forbearance program that was reversed by the courts just a couple of days later. Now, the extent to which student debt relief will be and loan forgiveness will be a part of Kamala Harris's platform remains to be seen. But however you feel about the idea of forgiving student loan debt or providing some level of relief, the undeniable and undisputable fact is that students and families are getting squeezed tighter than ever. Everybody recognizes this. It's not unlike mortgages and other loan products. Federal student loan interest rates have surged to the highest levels in over a decade. And, of course, the cost of a higher education certainly isn't getting any cheaper either. And since right now we're in the middle of peak season for student loan borrowers, we are joined this morning by Brian Walsh. He is certified student loan expert and head of advice and planning at SoFi. And Brian, as we mentioned, it's kind of the same as we're seeing with mortgages. Rates are up and prices are up. And just like it's becoming more and more difficult to afford to buy a house, so too a college degree.
Exactly. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of our members that are parents and their son or daughter's going off to school is concerned on this topic. But I think the great news is there's a lot of flexibility that you have related to really controlling the return on investment you get for college. A little bit more flexibility than you have, let's say, with purchasing a home or things like that, if they approach it strategically.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those strategies because there is some really good advice there. One of the things that has come up in this discussion of, you know, student loans and affordability is the fact that the primary borrower on these loans in most cases is an 18-year-old kid with little to no experience in understanding and evaluating the benefits and the pitfalls involved. And that's one of the biggest arguments for proponents of loan forgiveness, is that many borrowers just don't know what they are truly signing up for and getting themselves into. How do you respond to that? I mean, obviously, you're in the business of lending. So, you know, what is the answer to that?
Yeah, I think this is really an opportunity for parents and students to not only make this decision in a way that's going to help them in the future, but use this as an example for how the student should be approaching their finances for major decisions for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
So, for example, with college, really looking at this from a return on investment perspective. So when we're looking at schools, think about, okay, what's the cost I'm going to pay at these different schools after financial aid? And then really, what's that going to look like based on my interests, my intended major, different things like that? Because the simple fact is someone who's going to be, I don't know, majoring in electrical engineering is going to have the more capacity and more future earnings to pay back a loan than someone who maybe is an undecided major or is going to be majoring in education. And I think using that to really decide how much you're going to spend on college is going to be an important life lesson and a way to, you know, not have a huge amount of student loan debt compared to your income when you graduate.
So as you brought up, there are ways of paying for college, or at least partially paying for college, that don't involve borrowing money that you will have to pay back with interest.
Yeah, I think, you know, a few of the things that we talk to families about is, number one, where you choose to go to school. We're seeing more and more families saying, okay, if I have an undecided major, or maybe I'm looking to be a major that's not going to be very lucrative financially, maybe we started a two-year school and then transferred to a four-year school, or we started a satellite campus before transferring to the main campus to keep those costs down. Once they're in school, I think it's important to fully take advantage of your financial aid package. So federal loans, grants, scholarships, even work study type of programs, because every dollar that you bring in extra is just a dollar you don't have to borrow. And then number three would be really working collaboratively with the student to build out a budget for the school year and think about, okay, how much money do I actually need? Because sometimes when I know at least when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, I look at a loan, I kind of viewed it as monopoly money.
Yeah.
Whereas if I really determined exactly how much I needed and then thought about how much I'm going to have to pay back based on my expected earnings, it really leads to more responsible borrowing decisions that are going to be helpful down the road.
I remember, you know, my parents used to tell me, and this is, you know, preparing for college. When I'm preparing for college 40 years ago, obviously it's much different environment than it is today. And even then, you know, mom and dad would say, hey, we got jobs to help pay for college. Obviously, I don't think that's going to necessarily be practical today. But as you were saying, even, you know, just partially paying one, every dollar you make is one less dollar that you have to borrow.
Exactly. I think the idea of, you know, working your way through school is much less realistic now than it was even 10 or 20 years ago, let alone 30 or 40 years ago, just
right.
Because the average cost of higher education has significantly outpaced, you know, average wage growth. So most of the time we're working with people, it is going to be figuring out, okay, how do I minimize what I borrow? And then how do I borrow it in the right way? For some people, that's going to be, you know, federal student loans in the student's name. Sometimes it's loans in the parent's name. Sometimes it's, you know, private student loans where the parent co-signs. And really mixing and matching to figure out that right solution is going to be very helpful to people down the road.
You bring up such a good point that there are multiple types of loans, multiple ways of financing the portion of it that you have to finance once you go through all of those other steps that you were mentioning earlier. And, you know, through all of this, and I think this is important to bring up too, through all of this, it's important not to discourage individuals from pursuing a college degree. As we know, there are great jobs, well-paying jobs, great careers that you can get into without a college degree. But for those who do want to pursue that path, we don't necessarily want to discourage that. How do you advise students and families to really approach this conversation of evaluating those options and, you know, looking at the big picture without it becoming sort of a doom and gloom kind of thing?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with the fact that for the most part, conversations we're having, it's not people are, you know, discouraged from going to college, period. It's that they're being much more deliberate in their decisions because much more attention has been brought to this. And then you add in the higher interest rates with federal student loans now that got announced recently. I think really looking at this as an investment in your future earnings or your human capital is the best approach for this. Because if you're looking at it as an investment rather than an experience, then you're really going to start looking at it and saying, okay, what's the best way for me to pay for this? And what's the best way for me to spend this money in order for me to earn money in the future? And I think that's a positive change. And a lot of times negative attention gets placed on student loans and college costs, but more and more families are being deliberate with this decision, as opposed to 10, 15 years ago, when I first started in financial planning, much more conversations about, okay, my friends are going to this school, or I want this experience, or whatever it may be, without regards to the financial implications.
I like what you mentioned there, looking at this as an investment in oneself, and then the quote-unquote college experience becomes just kind of a bonus on top of that. Again, Brian Walsh is a certified student loan expert and head of advice and planning at SoFi. Where can folks get more information to put in their brains when they're starting to have these conversations? Because as we mentioned, right now is the time for many families.
Yeah, you can go to SoFi.com, SoFi.com, or you can download the SoFi app. We have tons of great free resources, and we even offer complimentary access to financial planners. So if you're weighing the pros and cons of decisions, or you have questions, or you want to kind of hash it out that way, that's something that we offer to our members.
Brian Walsh, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the week. Every day, hundreds, even thousands of service members will leave the military, and one in three of them say that the biggest hurdle in that transition is in navigating the civilian workforce, finding a regular job. But being that this is National Hire a Veteran Day, we're going to talk some more about those issues. Michelle Horn is with us this morning. She is a veteran, retired from the Army after 21 years. And currently, by the way, the Vice President of Communications for the Fisher House Foundation. What great work that they do. Also with us is Joe Jenna, Director of Talent Acquisition for 84 Lumber, another company joining the effort to break down some of these barriers that we're talking about. And Michelle, let me start with you. What are the most common challenges that veterans face when entering the workforce? What contributes to this being such a big hurdle for so many veterans?
Yeah, I think the challenge starts right at the beginning when you're going through the hiring process. For many veterans, this is the first time that they've had to put together a resume, try to translate those military skills into civilian terms, negotiate salaries, and even trying to figure out what to wear is all brand new.
So talk a little bit about why a day like this, National Hire a Veteran Day, is so important.
Yeah, so this day was founded in 2017 by a Marine Corps veteran who wanted to bridge the gap between veterans and the civilian workplace. So it's a great opportunity for veterans to highlight what they have to offer, but it's also a fantastic opportunity for employers to honor veterans by giving them these employment opportunities.
Yeah. And Joe, as we mentioned, 84 Lumber is another company that is joining in this effort to, as we said, break down some of those barriers. What has your experience been with veterans as employees and as director of talent acquisition, searching out these employees to hire?
Yeah, Chris, we've definitely at 84 Lumber made a commitment to hire the men and women that have served in the U.S. military. We typically find their skill sets are ideal for what we're looking for at 84 Lumber. We have a lot of similar structures to the military. So the individuals that are transitioning out of the military typically do very well within our culture. We have a very big train from the ground up, promote from within culture. And this gives them the opportunity to kind of take the reins of their own career and be able to grow in a lot of different avenues.
So you have a list, if you will, of the top transferable military skills that make veterans ideal candidates for employers. What are some of those skills?
Yeah, so we typically see leadership, teamwork, the ability to thrive in pressure situations. These individuals have basically seen so many different things working in the military, and it really does translate well. There's what they learned in the military can translate well to the civilian workforce.
And the way I see it, there are actually two messages embedded in this. For veterans, these are the skills you have to offer. Use them to your advantage with prospective employers. That's number one, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then for employers, recognizing and appreciating those skills that veterans bring to the table and how they may apply to the positions you're looking to fill. In some cases, it may be immediately obvious. In others, maybe you have to look a second time and understand how to apply those.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a win-win for both parties, really.
So what advice would you have for those veterans? As we said, you know, one in three say that, you know, entering the civilian workforce is the biggest challenge that they face in this transition. What advice would you have, and I'll throw this out to both of you, for those veterans who are looking for work?
Yeah, I would say, number one, be confident because your skills are valuable to employers. And two, think outside of the box. with Fisher House Foundation. I found just a wonderful place to be able to continue to serve military and veteran families. I think whether it's serving or trying to find a hobby and turn it into a new career, there are a lot of opportunities out there. You just have to think outside the box and search them out.
Yeah, I really agree with Michelle's point, Chris, that thinking outside the box is huge. A lot of individuals might not think that their skill sets from the military would translate well to 84 Lumber, but we really desire your skill sets and your ability, and we know the value that you will be bringing to the company and how much growth and upward mobility you would have moving forward.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of those skills that you were talking about earlier, in terms of, you know, veterans bringing to the table, so many of those are the soft skills that are so difficult to teach in the first place. And they have those, and you can teach them how to manage inventory and move product from point A to point B and so on and so forth, how to run the computers. But it's those soft skills that are really difficult to instill in workers, and they have them.
Yeah, that's spot on. And we, like you said, Chris, we can't teach a lot of the skills that they already have. So we can teach them a lot of the nuance about lumber, building materials.
Right.
The base skill set that they already have coming in just gives them a huge leg up coming into 84 Lumber.
And again, like we said, a message here for both employees, potential employees, veterans who are looking to make that transition, and for employers as well. Very important to think about as well. Again, Michelle Horn is with us, and Joe Jenna from 84 Lumber. We're talking about National Hire a Veteran Day. Thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin with a follow-up to a story that we had several weeks, if not months ago. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I do remember talking about this. The state of South Carolina had a bit of an accounting problem. They discovered $1.8 billion in their bank account, and they had no idea where it came from or what it was supposed to be used for. $1.8 billion. It's a bit of a mystery. Well, now the state has hired a financial firm to investigate the case. Alix Partners will be looking into the issue, trying to figure out exactly what the story is. So far, state officials have been unable to solve the mystery, leading to the decision to pay the firm $3 million to get to the bottom of it. I'll tell you what, if that doesn't work, I can solve your problem. And it'll only cost you $1.8 billion. You can give me $1.8 billion and I'll fix your problem. You won't have to worry about it anymore. I think I maybe should put in a bid to the state of South Carolina. It'll only cost you $1.8 billion and we'll fix it once and for all. That is so weird. $1.8 billion. Where'd this come from? Have you ever had that? You go to check your checking account and you find that there's more money in it than maybe what you realized, and you don't know where it came from? I have had that happen, never to that extreme. Maybe a dollar or two, but $1.8 billion. You would think you would know. What is it? Anyway, elsewhere in the broken news, this another... I guess a bit of a follow-up. Jose Salvador Alvarenga, who survived for 438 days stranded at sea, is now being sued by the family of his deceased crewmate. So this is the story. Apparently, Mr. Alvarenga was stranded on a disabled fishing boat for 438 days, more than a year, stranded at sea. And now the family of Ezequiel Cordoba is accusing Mr. Alvarenga of eating his crewmate after he passed away during the ordeal. Now, when Mr. Alvarenga was found and underwent a medical examination, there was no proof that he engaged in cannibalism. He insists that he survived by catching fish and birds and turtles and all of that, but there's apparently no explanation what happened to his crewmate, and so Mr. Cordoba's family is now suing for $1 million. That's a pretty expensive meal right there. Yeah, I don't know. But then again, if he was already dead, I don't know. I'm just saying. For a year. Man, that's weird. Let's see. Other items in the broken news this morning. A Pennsylvania man is being accused of setting his home on fire to prevent it from being sold. Authorities in Northumberland County say Andrew Souter intentionally set the house on fire late last month, the same day it was scheduled for a sheriff's sale. It was being foreclosed. Mr. Souter reportedly owed more than $100,000 on the home and was charged earlier this year with writing more than $45,000 in fraudulent checks to the mortgage holder to try and save his home. And now he is facing even more charges, felony charges, for the fire. Boy, that is good luck getting a new home at this point. You know, that's, man, I guess he won't have to worry about it. He's going to be housed in, well, let's say public housing moving forward, I guess. Won't have to worry about not having a place to live. We'll fix this. We'll set the home on fire. It's a great solution right there. Let's see here. Our dumb criminals of the day and I'm not sure where is this in Florida? It's got to be in Florida, right? It's got to be. Social media can be a great tool for promoting your business. Unless you're in the business of dealing drugs. Oh, here it is, Louisville, Kentucky. It's not in Florida after all. It's in Kentucky. Okay. I guess they've got dumb people in Kentucky, too. As strange as it seems, Tara Lyles and James Lyles of Louisville, Kentucky, were arrested after police got wind of them posting videos of their illegal drug operation on TikTok. According to local news reports, undercover cops set up a meeting with the couple in the parking lot of the local Kroger supermarket under the guise of purchasing some marijuana, which is not legal in Kentucky. Through the use of a GPS tracking device, police were able to locate a warehouse out of which the Lyles conducted their operation. Inside, they found a large marijuana edible production area and four safes containing THC products and marijuana plants. Tara and James were both charged with trafficking in marijuana. And Tara was also charged with possession of drugs and or drug paraphernalia. So lesson learned. It's a good thing to promote your business online. But if that's your business, it doesn't work so well. I can imagine when they were arrested, probably stunned at how they were found out. How did you ever discover our well disguised operation? And finally, in the broken news this morning, this one is from Florida, from St. Petersburg. A woman has been arrested for domestic battery after getting into an argument with her fiancé. The victim told cops that Molly Rose Hogan, age 26, grabbed him around the head and struck him on the chest, torso, back, and legs, causing multiple physical injuries. This is her fiancé is making the, because this is a big argument here, big physical altercation. According to a police report, alcohol appears to have been a factor, but the main reason that the fight ensued was a heated argument over signing a prenuptial agreement prior to the marriage. That's right. She beat him up after he wanted her to sign a prenup. Ms. Hogan was arrested for domestic battery and simple battery for allegedly biting a witness during the incident as well. I don't know about you, but I can't imagine why in the world he wanted to her to sign a prenup. It's just a surprise. Ask her to sign a prenup. I can't imagine why he felt he needed a prenup. There you go. That is your broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN needs your help to stuff the bus with school supplies for needy students in our area. Go to WFIN.com for donation information. Bring your donation to the Yellow School Bus at the Tiffin Avenue McDonald's in Findlay Thursday and Friday, July 25th and 26th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday, July 27th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. School supply registration forms are required and can be accessed at cchsupport.org. Stuff the Bus, brought to you by McDonald's and 1330 WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We hear a lot about the 1% these days in politics. Depending on which side of the aisle you are on, you're vilifying the 1%, or you are aspiring to be the 1%. On the other, there's a goal that you should shoot for on the other side of the political aisle. But how much would you actually have to make to be among the 1% or even the 5% at the top of the income scale? Nationwide, you might be surprised to learn this. According to IRS tax return data, nationwide, you would need to earn $787,700 annually to be in the top 1%. Now, that's nationwide, but the number is higher or lower depending on what state you live in. You'll need $1.5 million in earnings to be in the top 1% in Connecticut. That's the number one state. You'll also need to make over $1 million a year to make that cut in Massachusetts and California. However, you will reach 1% status in West Virginia, Mississippi, and New Mexico by making a little less than $500,000. That's quite a difference. The median household income in the United States is about $75,000. And so you can do the math from there. In Ohio, an annual income of $581,161 would put you in the top 1%, and a relatively modest $231,962 would put you in the top 5%. And that, by the way, makes Ohio 41st out of 50 in terms of the rankings of how difficult or easy it is to reach that that pinnacle and top 5% or top 1%. 41st out of 50, or put another way, it is among the 10th. It is, in fact, the 10th easiest state, Ohio is, to become one of the elites. So, happening around town, folks, and welcome to a new life. We're celebrating 5 years of offering A Road to Hope with their annual fundraiser coming up next month. And we are joined by the co-founder of Welcome to a New Life, Huck Rowe, and CEO Carla Benjamin. Thank you both for being with us today. We certainly appreciate it. 5 years. This has been quite the success story in 5 years. When you started this, what was your expectation?
Well, when Stan Kajawa called, he knew very familiar with the inmates in the jail, and especially those addicted to drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. back in April 2018. We sat there and talked about this for a couple hours, and to be perfectly honest with you, we didn't know where to go, what to do, but Stan was connected with the Children's Mentoring, so we sort of mm-hmm. copied that mentoring program. So uh-huh. let's think about an adult mentoring program, and it took off from there.
And the over the 5 years, what has been the biggest success? What's been the biggest, the most fulfilling part for you?
Well, Chris, I'll say this. I told Stan that we had to interview a lot of people in this community mm-hmm. to make sure this community would support such a program. Mm-hmm. And we took off and we interviewed over 200 people. Mm-hmm. Some of them were groups. And when we talked to those people, when you get 100% support, everyone we talk with, yes, do this. We need this in this community. We need to change those people's life and give them hope.
You knew you were onto something there.
We, by all means, and I'll never forget the first person we met with was Don Templin from Senior Vice President of Marathon. Mm-hmm. Met with him first, and he said, "My goodness, go for it. You need to do this. You have my support." And from that on, we heard that same story from everybody.
Yeah. Carla, explain how Welcome to a New Life works.
So we are a mentoring program that connects individuals who are part of the criminal justice system mm-hmm. With wonderful volunteer mentors within our community. Some that really have at a point in life said, never done this, never don't understand it. But mm-hmm. then we have some, you know, that over the 5 years we've grown to the point where now we have some with some lived experience. So it's great to see how things have changed. Mm-hmm. But really, we are really working with individuals to help them gain a productive life, working with individuals that have gotten to a point in their life where enough is enough, they want to make that change, and to be able to have mentors who come alongside them, work with them and say, you know what, you want to do this, we're going to come alongside and be your friend, be your accountability partner, but at the same time, give you hope and help you succeed and find the better, you know, your better version of yourself.
Some of those life skills that maybe they are missing that lead them down that path in the first place.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, when we started this thing, this community is blessed with many nonprofits to do a great job and a quality of life. Mm-hmm. But if we didn't have the cooperation from the criminal justice system, the donors, all the people, the other nonprofits help us out, and especially those mentors. Those mentors are the heroes. And can you just imagine stepping up, be a mentor and volunteering and see this opportunity to change and save someone's life, how that feels to see that success that you have with another human being?
It's interesting you use that verbiage. You refer to it as saving a life. But in many respects, you could either figuratively or in some cases literally be saving somebody's life through a program like
That's
this.
True. You know, Chris, we were told by Dave Beach, who was in the probation officer for the city of Findlay, mm-hmm. the municipal courts. He said, if we can change or save one life, all your efforts are worth it. Yeah. Right now, Carla and her team are heading towards 40, where we change and save lives.
So that was actually one of the things that I wanted to ask. I mean, how many individuals are in the program at any given time? I mean, how many mentors do you have? How many individuals are you helping through this program?
Absolutely. So over the last 5 years, we've actually contacted or been in contact with over 300 people.
Wow.
So, and that, as you mentioned, that could change on, you know, a daily, a monthly, whatever. So, but when we look at our numbers, I will say that consistently 30 to 45 people is who we're really constantly working with. And it really depends on where they're at. It's their mindset. It's their choice, right? Mm-hmm. This is an at-will program. So when an individual is committed, you know, to do this, we want to give them all those, you know, any help that we could do to help them succeed in that. But ultimately, it's their choice. And so I will say that having all of these individuals that we're working with come, you know, really wanting to put that time and effort into it is what we want to help them succeed on that.
Now, just like any program, and I guess we could call this in some level a rehab type of program, like any of those, you're not going to have a 100% success rate.
No.
What is the success rate? I mean, how frequently are you able to follow through and see the a positive end result.
We're seeing it. We're seeing some really awesome things happening. People getting jobs. We have one mentee that I will say just got his first new to him truck. Those that are getting their driver's license for the first time legally, right? Like actually finally driving legally.
Yeah.
We have many of those. We have individuals in our program who are now giving back themselves, working in recovery type environments as well. So, as Puck mentioned earlier, us having that connection with the criminal justice system, us having connection with other nonprofits makes this all work. You know, we're able to make these connections, put people and, you know, help them make those connections as needed, really makes all of this work.
Is that really one of the most fulfilling things? Are those little successes? I mean, as Carla was saying, you know, somebody, an individual getting their driver's license or getting that, you know, that first car, or, you know, something along those lines. I mean, you can think big picture, you know, kicking addiction. But it's those little things that make a huge difference.
You're right, Chris. You know, we all make mistakes in our life. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, these people perhaps in with the wrong friends, the wrong crowd.
Sure.
Never had, as I said before, hope. But what when you see these people stepping up and in jail, and we go in there every week to interview inmates in jail, men and women, and it's just amazing to see how these people truly want a life that they deserve. And the only way they can get it, they have to step up and pay the price and do what their mentors and Carla and her team ask from them. And these people who are doing that, they're finding their new life.
So the annual fundraiser is actually coming up next month. It's a couple of weeks away. What, on the 10th,
yeah,
I think it is?
It's quickly approaching.
Yeah. So that's a couple of weeks away, but we want to mention it right now because the ticket deadline is the 31st.
It's coming up. Yes.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is promote the fact that we have some amazing sponsors that have stepped up to help us with this. The whole goal of this fundraiser is to bring still some more awareness as to what this organization is trying to do, the mission, right? Connecting individuals with wonderful mentors and giving them those resources to reduce those barriers. So that is really what the whole purpose of this fundraiser is. Also then to help us raise funds so that we could continue to do pro-social engagement activities with our mentors, providing some socks and sometimes those whites they need when they're at the jail. Mm-hmm. Just other things, essential needs as individuals are working towards and reducing some of those barriers.
To help continue to pave those roads and build those bridges,
absolutely.
As it were.
Absolutely.
So how do folks get tickets for the fundraiser?
They could get a hold of us at our phone number, 419-455-6082. You could go on our website, welcometonewlife.org, or you could email admin@welcometonewlife.org. So wonderful ways to get a hold of us. We are more than willing to try to help assist in any way that we can to get you a ticket. There's actually no actual ticket. You'll get the ticket at the door.
Yep. All right. Very good. We've also got a link on our webpage for more information about the Welcome to a New Life program, the annual fundraiser that is coming up on the 10th. But again, the deadline to register is July 31st. And Puck, final word.
Well, I can tell you right now, this fundraiser we're having, it costs you $100, but keep in mind, you're getting a $50 meal from France with the Olympic as a theme, and you get a chance to win a $1,000 certificate from AAA if your name is drawn. You get reward and you're helping this organization by $50.
And, of course, the personal reward as well as helping out.
One final thing. We have beautiful offices, thanks to Gary Harps, on West Bancroft across from Marathon Station. And we've had so many people step up. This is almost a community program, and it's run and for the community, and we're trying to give back to many what they're supporting.
It truly takes a village. Carla Benjamin, Puck Rowe from Welcome to a New Life. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, our little corner of the World Wide Web. You can find us at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're taking the show on the road. The podcast will originate from McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue. It's our annual Stuff the Bus school supplies drive for students and families in need.
So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.